The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Inside the Beltway live on this Tuesday morning. First, I want to begin by thanking all of you. Hundreds of you gave yesterday to Prison Fellowship Angel Tree. I think maybe moved by the Waukesha tragedy. And I would ask many of you to do the same today. The Prison Fellowship Angel Tree is at the top of HughHewitt.com. I was kind of astonished that many of you reacted as I did, which is, and the Fetching Mrs. Hewitt, which is the only way to respond to something that awful is to do some good. And every time you make a donation to Angel Tree, one or more children will come forward with a present under their tree from a parent or both parents in prison in 30 days or so. And they will light up and they will have some joy. And the total amount of joy in the world will be greater for it. So thank you. All you have to do is head over to HughHewitt.com. Go to the top of the HughHewitt.com. Let it load. It takes count one, count two, and there it is, boom, it's a Christmas tree. And your one-time donation is tax-deductible, of course. It can be as large as you want. We had many 500s, a few thousands yesterday. My friend Mike Gallagher went to town. The phones were open. The phones aren't open when I broadcast at first, but then Mike comes in and trundles up and throws that number out there and beats it like a drum. Good for him. Gallagher is a great man, and I gave him a hard time yesterday about being Scrooge, but he's actually playing Daddy Warbucks. So I assume.
Are you seeking money from me then?
Many thousands are in want of common necessaries. Hundreds of thousands are in want of common comforts.
Are there prisons?
Plenty of prisons.
The workhouses, are they still in operation?
They are. I wish I could say they were not.
The treadmill, the poorhouses, still in full vigor?
All very busy, sir.
I was afraid from what you said that something had stopped them in full force.
A few of us are endeavoring to raise a fund to buy the poor some meat and drink and food and warmth.
Oh, what can we put you down for, sir? Nothing.
You wish to be anonymous?
I wish to be left alone, since you asked me what I wish to.
That's usually Mike when I call him up, but now he's actually changed. I think he's had the ghost of Christmas past, present, and future visit him, and he was really on fire yesterday, as were you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Let me give you some updates in the morning rundown. I had a vigil in Waukesha last night with hundreds, maybe a couple of thousand people in the park at Waukesha because it's such a searing thing, and stories began to emerge of the victims, three pairs of siblings, trio of the dancing grannies, the sorts of stories that put names and faces on the victims of a senseless career criminal driving like a maniac through a parade, indifferent to the casualties in front of him. That man, Daryl Brooks, of course, has been charged with homicide yesterday. We knew his name yesterday, but it wasn't officially released until after the show was over. He's 39 years old. He has a rap sheet as long as the day. He should not have been allowed out on bail. I think last week he was allowed out on bail. It was set too low, arbitrarily. The Fetching Miss Hewitt looked at me and said, "How does that happen?" I said, "The government, dear. The government makes automatic decisions. They stamp something. Somebody somewhere is agonizing over the fact that they stamped Daryl Brooks eligible for a low bail. Man, it's a dangerous felon, convicted, and was charged again and was fleeing allegedly from a knife fight. The five people who are dead will not be reclaimed. 48 others are injured. Some are in critical care at Milwaukee Children's. Pray for them." The depictions of this are heartrending, and parents everywhere are just, you know, staring at ceilings wondering, how do I keep my kids safe in a world like this? The reality is the world has always been like this. From the moment that Western civilization emerged, there's been a tiger around the cave waiting to jump on us. And, you know, go read the Old Testament, David fighting lions, all right? So it's not like this is news. The children are the most vulnerable among us, but as children were struck down, raise up children with Angel Tree. Other news. Kyle Rittenhouse and the left's terrifying assault on due process. Boy, do I want you to read Gerard Baker today in the Wall Street Journal. I put a quote out on Twitter. If you're following me, you'll be able to read it. In the minds of the ranting radicals of the Squad or MSNBC, Gerard writes, dimly repeated by the president, these so-called rights, presumption of innocence, due process, trial by jury, proof of guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, etc., are not the bedrock legal protections against overweening authority the Anglo-Saxon jurisprudence has deemed them to be. In the minds of the regnant left, when they find the defendant unsympathetic, they are inconveniences, fetishized excrescences of the judicial process that obstruct and subvert the larger and more important objective of social justice. In this increasingly popular account of the left, they are the armor with which the capitalist white supremacists protect their hegemony. As such, they can be dismissed. Gerard has it exactly right. We are in a revolutionary fervor on the left, and the left owns the Democratic Party. And if you don't throw them out of office at every level, you're asking. I listened to a great podcast yesterday about San Francisco by Michael Schellenberger, about how the left has destroyed San Francisco. And he's a very liberal man. His positions are homeless are getting to where mine got years ago, which is mandatory rehab, universal psychiatric treatment, clear the streets and institutionalize people. They don't get an option to be treated. They've got to be treated. Otherwise, they die and they destroy cities with them. I'll get Schellenberger on the show down the road. A great, great podcast I'll find it. Israel has begun vaccinating children 5 to 11. The European protests against the COVID restrictions and lockdowns, the new ones, are spreading like wildfire. They did over the weekend. Pete Buttigieg on Sunday said, we don't need vaccines for flights. You know why? Because people will rise up. They're already going to rise up against masks pretty soon. You can't tell a free people in Europe, and especially not in the United States, what to do without asking their permission for 2 years and not expect this. Because people are common sense driven, and they know that if they're vaccinated and they've had their booster, or if they've made a choice not to be vaccinated, they know their risks, they know what's going on, they go into restaurants, they go onto planes, they now know how to calculate their life. And there is no more reason for mandates anywhere, because a free people can decide for itself. Jerome Powell, not that it's illegal, if it's an employer demanding a mandate, they can do that. And the feds, by the way, better fire the 10%. You cannot mandate and then take the people who are compliant and say, I didn't mean it, I'm going to let these 10% in. No, fire those 10%. You got to do that. There may be some national security, exceptions. But fire those people who said, in the federal government, because, by the way, there's no other way to fire people. Good opportunity if you've got some knuckleheads out there who are also not taking the vaccine. You can at least check them off and get those guns. You can't fire anyone in the OPM system that I ran for a while. Jerome Powell nominated. Good move by the president. His other choice was nightmarish when it came to inflation. Powell's not that good either. But the U.S. stock sold off yesterday. Let me do my Birch Gold. I'll check it here. Brought to you by Birch Gold. If you haven't bought gold, go and get it now. Inflation is here. Gold this morning is at $1,809. That's down $50 from last week. So the price point has become more favorable as they expect interest rates to go up. I don't know why they think Jerome Powell's going to be hawkish. He's just not going to be as crazy as the other person that they were going to put on. It's still very much a low interest rate environment. The 10-year Treasury at 1.625%. I'm going to talk about that in a little bit. But gold at 1809 is a great buy point. And around 1800, around 2000. Some people just use it at $100 increments. Roll over a portion of your 401k or your IRA, 5 to 10%, into Birch Gold, or you can buy gold direct at HughGold.com or text my name Hugh to 474747. It's HughGold.com or text Hugh to 474747. And they will deal with your gold needs, 1809 this morning. By the way, we are in the Christmas season. My friends at the Wild Adventure have opened up their website for next summer. If you're wondering about how do I get away, how do I work through the last 2 years, how do I just get some rest, and you're a guy, and you're over 35, go to the Wild Adventure. If you're under 35, go to the Wild Adventure and get the young guns. A great week of either learning how to fly fish or the best fly fishing in the world with 12 people. You can take 11 of your buddies. You can meet some new people. Dwayne and I have gone many times. The TWA changes lives and will change the pace of your life and the way that you approach it. Head over to TWA.us, TWA.us, and just get signed up. The perfect Christmas present for your spouse, by the way, if you were sitting there in the kitchen thinking he's lost, he's just not as happy as he used to be, or he's happy but he could be happier. TWA.us, the perfect Christmas present. I'll be right back, America. Stay tuned to the Hugh Hewitt Show. America, I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined by David Drucker. In Trump's Shadow is David's brand new book, which continues to fly off shelves everywhere. Good morning, David. How are you?
I'm great, Hugh.
David, the poll numbers for President Biden are awful and getting worse. I mean, genuinely through the floor bad, making Trump look strong by comparison. To what is the most significant aspect of that? There's an argument on Twitter this morning. It's the scamper from Afghanistan, others say inflation, others say all of the above. What sayeth you?
Well, I'd say that it's all of the above, but I'd say it in this manner. I think what Afghanistan did and what the president has not recovered since Afghanistan is it punctured this image of him as a competent, steady leader, right? And that is one of the reasons why Americans elected him. One of the worst things you can do as a candidate or as an incumbent is fail on the issue that voters chose you for. So you can make all kinds of mistakes, and voters may not like it, but the one mistake you can't make politically is, but this is the whole reason why I elected you. And that's why Afghanistan mattered so much to Biden's image, and I think we can now say that in the hindsight of a couple of months since it happened. I think the issue with inflation is that the president has been doing a number of things that many Democratic voters like, and that, look, it's possible, just like with Obamacare, 10 years from now, 15 years from now, voters are going to really like some of the stuff that he's been doing, particularly in the larger social spending bill that has yet to clear the Senate or finally clear the House. But right now, voters are most concerned about inflation and things related to inflation as it affects their view of the economy and their view of their own personal economy at home. And when you're doing a bunch of things that voters may like if you ask them about it, but they don't think you're doing enough for the number one and number two problem, let's say, that are impacting them right now, they are going to be very unhappy. And all these other things you're telling them about is not going to get the job done. In other words, you can't tell them, look, I know inflation's high, but if you get free preschool or taxpayer-funded, paid leave, that's going to make your milk cost less. And they're going to say, that's all good. I kind of need that thing, but I don't see how that's going to make my milk and bread cost less. So that's where Biden is tripped up right now.
Well, do you think that is widely understood to be the case by the overclass? And by that, I mean people who are... No. Okay, that's what I wanted to hear from you, because I believe that I was listening to Realignment Pod yesterday. And do you ever listen to Realignment Pod with Marshall and Songer?
I have not.
Okay, it's very good.
But I have not.
They're young people. I mean, they're very young. And I was listening to it to prep for an interview tomorrow with one of their guests. And I thought to myself, these are young people. They really don't understand middle age or older people, and the way we look at the world is just profoundly different. They have never been through inflation. They don't know what we're grumbling about, David. They really have no idea what we're worried about.
No, and I think it also matters about, and this is not true across the board necessarily, but it matters where you are in your life, right? So if you've got children, if you've got a mortgage, if you're paying for private school or concerned about your public schools, all of these things impact your view of inflation and supply chain economics and how that's going to impact your daily life. Now, I would say, Hugh, that Democratic professionals that understand voters know very well what's going on. I've talked to them, and they told me straight up, we're not doing enough to address voters' concerns about how much they're paying for goods when they go to the store. So they know what's going on. And I think to a degree the White House has finally figured out what's going on. I just think that they continue to insist on talking about this stuff as though it's the unfortunate byproduct of everything's getting back to normal and everything's great again. And that's the other thing you can't do with voters. You can't tell them that something that's bad is really not so bad. I think that's what kind of impacted
David.
That's what impacted Trump in the 2020 reelection campaign. He kept trying to tell Americans concerned about the coronavirus pandemic that it really wasn't happening. It really wasn't so bad if it was happening. Voters don't like that, and that's what Biden has been doing to a degree on Afghanistan, but particularly right now when it comes to these domestic concerns.
And the best guide to American politics going forward is wrong track, right track. If you look at 1984, 1996, 2008, the right track, wrong track numbers predicted what was going to happen. For whatever reason, the right track, wrong track numbers come up. And right now, where do you think the right track, wrong track? I haven't looked it up, but I'll bet you we're on the wrong track in the estimates
yeah.
of people.
Well, look, Hugh, I will say over the last 20 years, and this goes back 20 years, the country has been a perpetual wrong track dominating environment. So I'm in some ways less interested in that than I would have been in the past. But I think you can look at all of the polling, and anybody can pick apart one poll, and maybe one poll looks a little bit less bad than another poll. But just as we saw in that Virginia governor's race down the stretch in October as we headed toward the November 3rd election, the trend is clear. And the trend right now for the president and Democrats in Congress is just not good.
It's not. It's terrible. But I suggest to you that even relative to old right track, wrong track readings, just because we've been on the wrong track for 20 years since 9/11 doesn't mean that we're not on the wrong track. I mean, just because it's stuck there doesn't mean that we're indifferent to data. I think we are on the wrong track, and America knows it, particularly vis-a-vis the CCP. David M. Drucker on Twitter, his book, In Trump's Shadow, would be a great Christmas present for anyone. Come back. Hour number two.
Hi, it's Hugh Hewitt for Birch Gold. If you found yourself completely befuddled by events in Afghanistan, alarmed about inflation and otherwise uneasy, well, about everything, about Americans standing in the world, about what comes next, then you're feeling like everybody else is, and uncertainty is usually a time that you want to increase your holdings in gold. When I do that, I do it with Birch Gold. I buy my gold from Birch Gold. You can go to HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, H-U-G-H, to 474747. They will send you free information. If you want to roll over a portion of your IRA or your 401k into physical precious metals, Birch Gold is who to do that with. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, countless five-star reviews, thousands of happy customers. If you're thinking, I got to get some gold, do it with Birch Gold via HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, to 474747. That's Hugh to 474747 or HughGold.com.
Morning, Glory, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for listening. If you do not know, there's a conservative crack-up going on inside the Beltway as Jonah Goldberg and Stephen Hayes have departed from Fox News. There's a story at the American Spectator about addition by subtraction at Fox News, with which I disagree. Molly Hemingway quotes from it approvingly. Molly is a good friend, as is Mark. Byron York works with both Jonah and Stephen. Jonah, longtime friend of the show. Stephen Hayes used to be. He drops a nuclear bomb on my head a couple of years ago that I didn't see coming, but I don't know what that's all about. Byron York works with everybody, and apparently amicably, like I try to do. As I quote to Molly, we, Lincoln's first inaugural, we are not enemies. We must not be enemies, but friends. Byron, what is going on?
Well, good morning, Hugh. You know, my official position in all of this has been, I wish everyone well.
Yeah, you and I pretty much adopt the same view on Beltway punditry.
Yeah, well, you know, what can I say?
You're a Fox News contributor. Do you have a conflict? I don't want to put you in a bad spot.
No, I am a Fox News contributor. I have been since 2006. And I've been happy being a Fox News contributor. So I think that's my story right there.
And you know, by the way, I am an NBC News contributor, though I've been exiled, and they're about to breach my deal. I don't know why, but I've been exiled. So who knows what's going on inside of network executives trying to figure out their audiences. I think this all comes down to trying to find your audience and keep them happy.
Well, I mean, there's always been this, a lot of commentary about Fox, about having almost being like the old broadcast entertainment networks, in the sense that they had the news division and then they had the entertainment programming. And so people have said, well, the primetime programming on Fox is kind of like the entertainment programming, and then you know, Special Report and Fox News Sunday and the whole daytime, really, are all about the news division. I think that's unfair because a lot of news is made during primetime on Fox. but clearly it's opinion driven, and clearly Steve and Jonah became increasingly uncomfortable with the primetime programming. So I'm not sure what to say beyond that.
Well, I think, though, the vitriol that greeted their departure and the fact that they made it public, people leave all the time. You know, I'm exiting NBC, whether or not happily or not, doesn't matter. People change jobs all the time. I don't know why the vitriol is attached to this, to a certain extent, there's some Trumpism working at work here. There's some anti never, never Trumper, never, 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 never not Trumper. You know, that whole thing is mixed up in this. And I just think it's silly. The Chinese are eating our lunch.
Well, we do, you know, we are in a different period with social media. And, you know, anybody who has, say, a Twitter presence, as everybody involved in this discussion does, you know, gets a lot of abuse on Twitter, but you know, it's not real, as Chappelle said. You know,
it's not real. You know, what's real is a CCP hypersonic glide missile that can detach up to 5 more nuclear warheads and direct them independent of them. It rendered obsolete our if it can be perfected, and it looks pretty doggone good. It rendered obsolete our carrier fleet.
Well, you know, I have to. That my only question about the hypersonic missile is, how come we don't have one?
Well, I'm going to get to that with Admiral Stavridis and Jerry Hendricks coming up next hour.
I mean, usually you find out that if some other country has made some technological, you know, in the sort of post-Sputnik world, which is 60 or 70 years, usually you find out some other country has made some technical advance. The United States has had that for years, right?
Yeah, Senator Cotton, by the way, has cautioned me on this program. I'm not giving anything away from a private conversation. You don't know what we've got here. Don't worry.
Well, there you go. I mean, he's on the Armed Services Committee and the Intelligence Committee.
Yep.
So I'm hoping he knows stuff. But, I mean, as just an American, anytime I see something like this, I say, well, how come we don't have that? And, you know, for example, whenever we're hacked or some way like that, something like that, clearly we have the capability of hacking and disrupting other countries, I think, far beyond anything anybody's done to us. Good. But this hypersonic missile is being treated like China has this fantastic new thing, this missile that goes around the world in 10 seconds, and we don't have anything.
I'll talk to him about that, although I want to come back to the sharks and the jets inside the Beltway in just a second. The Republican sharks and the Republican jets, by the way. We're not talking about Democrats and legacy media. We're talking about sharks and jets inside the conservative movement. But I will tell you this. Dimitri's reporting over the weekend is that they had technology that DARPA was surprised that they have that we don't have. And if that is the case, we have trouble. Let me go back to Sharks and the Jets. I saw the preview for the new West Side Story by Steven Spielberg. And if I had a producer, we'd go out with Tonight. And it just seems to me that punditry is born to fight and born to be incredibly anxious about where they stand in the world, which is absolutely anti-Lincoln. Lincoln stood for the proposition that you know what you believe and you stand on it on every stage. Have we lost that?
Well, look, I think that the idea that there should be a lot of unity amongst one side is overrated. I think the whole – I mean, you have to remember the famous Reagan 11th commandment was from a man who challenged a sitting president of his own party.
You bet you, you bet you, you bet you. Amen. Preach it.
There you go. So there is no 11th commandment that Jonah has to believe everything that Byron believes. It just isn't. Clearly the Trump years have been very, since 2015, since Trump became kind of a serious candidate, had been very divisive. And it has, I think, exposed, I think Trump didn't really create these divisions as much as expose them. He created divisions, exposed divisions inside the Republican coalition. I'm talking about voters now, but also inside the Republican commentariat. So,
I think one of the big
happened in the past.
The San Andreas fault is between national security conservatives and Trump cultural conservatives. And the national security conservatives, and you and I are both among them, and we're also both among those who saw the good in Donald Trump and the bad. That fracture was very deep for some people and can't be bridged. But now I want to switch on you, the next generation. I've been listening to a podcast with Sagar and Jetty, Marshall Kozloff, and they had a guest, Derek Roberts, and Derek will be on tomorrow. Have you listened to these guys?
I have not.
They're young. They're very, very young. And I began to feel very, very old listening to them. But I also realized there was a reason that we used to only have older people comment, is that unless you're beyond a certain part of your life, and that usually means children, you have a completely different take on the world. True or false?
Not always true. I think, how old was William F. Buckley when he wrote God and Man at Yale, right? In his
20s. Yeah, but he started Firing Line in 1966, I believe.
Well, that's fine. He had already become a conservative icon and kind of created the modern conservative movement by that time. So Buckley was born in the 20s sometime. So by the 50s, he has become a voice. I don't really think that. I think, as a matter of fact, I think a lot of people do some of their best work, you know, in their 20s and their 30s, and they spend the rest of their lives being celebrated or remembered for what they did when they were
young. Well, that's the J.D. Salinger model. But in terms of punditry, I think it's dangerous in the era of social media to elevate very young, and I mean in the 20s, by mid-30s, you normally have a worldview. Normally when you have authority over people, you develop a worldview and it sticks. I think the problem with social media is basically youth, Byron.
Well, what was that punchline on the internet? Nobody knows you're a dog. I mean, a lot of people...
Ha! I didn't! I haven't heard that.
On the internet, yeah, I think it was like, you know, the dog is sitting, he's got his paws on the keyboard. So you begin to get noticed. If you have something to say, if you have insights or a particular facility with expressing them, you begin to get noticed before people know you're 22. So that is just a feature of the internet, and I think it's all for the good, actually.
So last question. Does the rift heal among conservative Beltway?
No, I don't think so. I think some of these rifts are going to be pretty permanent, and it happens when parties split. It happens when, you know, factions split. So, no, I don't see a big healing in the future.
You know what? I'm going to disagree with you there. It takes one person to build bridges rather than burn them. We will see. Byron York, happy Thanksgiving to you, a great and reliable guest and a fine commentator on Fox News at the Washington Examiner and here on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Come right back.
Somewhere beyond the sea.
Welcome back, America. That music means I'm joined by Admiral James Stavridis, retired United States Navy. Good morning, Admiral. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Good to see you.
I love when you're wearing the uniform, Admiral. The blue blazer and the blue shirt is just what I love saying. We call that the uniform around here. I know you're used to uniforms, but this is of a different order of magnitude. Admiral, I want to read to you the Business Insider summary of the Financial Times scoop by Demi on Twitter, Dimitri. A Chinese hypersonic weapon that alarmed top U.S. military leaders fired something off as it sped towards its target. China tested a hypersonic weapon in July that alarmed some U.S. military leaders. New reporting said the weapon fired off something mid-flight over the South China Sea. Excuse me. One military leader said last week the test should create a sense of urgency. What happened? We talked about this before. What did we learn that was new?
That these hypersonics that the Chinese are beginning to deploy can be used as a bus, and you can have off-ramps from the bus. And so think of the MIRV, the multiple warheads that are on our intercontinental ballistic missiles. This is an extremely primitive first attempt at that. But the hypersonic missile, which moves, you know, 5 to 6 times the speed of sound, that's the same as a ballistic missile, but the trajectory is much more maneuverable and it is less predictable. So if you add the complexity of additional offshoots to that, you increase the difficulties of taking on this target. We ought to be very concerned about the race to hypersonics.
Now, Admiral, if anyone saw The White House Has Fallen, that movie that Morgan Freeman played the president, a swarm of drones arrived from nowhere and swept over and went in different directions and independently targeted and destroyed everybody except the president, who managed to miraculously, with the assistance of whoever was the co-star, dive under the water and avoid being hit, which I think is a perfect ad for submarines. Are we talking about that level of thousands of things coming at us from space at five times the speed of sound?
The short answer is not yet. But I'd say this is in the 5 to 10 year future. Nothing that you just described is unimaginable to technologists who are exploring packages. And by the way, it's not just the United States and China. Two nations that are on the forefront of drone technology. One will not surprise you. That's Israel. The other may surprise you is Turkey. Turkey has an extremely advanced set of programs in drone technology, unmanned vehicles, and they're selling them in a great swath of many of these conflicts globally. So this technology is proliferating. You know, we talk all the time, as we should, about the proliferation of nuclear technology. I would say unmanned technology, space. Hugh, the same thing is happening in space, whereas these space vehicles are getting smaller and smaller, more and more accessible. And the third leg of that new triad, in my view, is unmanned. It's unmanned, space, and special forces. That triad, to me, is kind of the new strategic triad. And you can use hypersonics in particular on the first two of those. So this is kind of the new wave in warfare. China has stolen a march on us in hypersonics. They're demonstrating that. I would guess Russia is similarly slightly ahead of us at this point. We're still ahead in cyber. We have the best special forces in the world. But hypersonics, we have to pay attention.
Let's explain stolen a march for the Steelers fans, Admiral. They are not particularly well-read. They're stolen a march. They're thinking, you know, wait, what happened to April? Are we going to go right from February to April? And they're going to so let's slow it down. What do you mean by stolen a march?
Sure. A military term that means your opponent is moving more rapidly than you to the battlefield. In other words, you've got an army poised on one side of the river. The other army is poised on the far side of the river. They have gotten one step ahead of you. They have stolen the march, gotten a day or so ahead of you. It comes from ancient warfare between the Greeks of Athens and Sparta. In today's context, Hugh, it's not about marching on foot. It's about launching hypersonics. It's about unmanned technology. It's about how elite are your special forces. It's about how accessible and what you can deny in space. So we don't want to fall behind in any of those. And we're not behind in cyber, for example. We're not behind in unmanned. We're not behind in special forces. Hypersonics, I think we have work to do.
So the civilian sitting in his studio, it just seems to me that we've got to go underwater and above the sky. That those are the two things they can't. Now, maybe they can track and these things can dive deep, but if they can't get to the Columbia class nuclear submarine, there will always be a deterrent, right? Am I right about that?
You are. And for the Steelers fans, the Columbia class is the huge ballistic missile submarine that carries our intercontinental range ballistic missiles. And each leg of that triad, the strategic nuclear triad, has a different strength and a different weakness. But the Columbia class, these ballistic missiles, the follow-on to the Ohio class, of course, the Columbia class at this moment with the technologies available is invulnerable. It cannot be destroyed at sea, and therefore it's the response of last resort, even if an opponent were able to take out our long-range bombers and our in-ground intercontinental ballistic missiles. At this moment, given the technologies and what we can see for 10 to 20 years, it is unlikely that an opponent would be able to take out that Columbia class. That's why it's so important. That's why it's central to Navy shipbuilding and really central to the defense budget of the United States.
That's why I did not understand how in the trillions that we have spent, we did not forward fund and immediately commission all of it to get started, because we know how to build them and we're the world's leader and we need attack submarines to defend them and we need Columbia class to defend us. Here's my question as a civilian sitting, again, don't know anything, not an engineer, didn't play one on TV, and haven't stayed at a Holiday Inn. Does the water protect? Does the is there some way they can, by they I mean the CCP or any adversary, find the Columbia class and take them out before the strike? The land base just seems to me to be an artifact, like the battleship. Sorry to the missileers like John Noonan who are listening. Your day was over. It's gone. But is there some way for them to get our Columbia class?
At this minute, the short answer is no, for two reasons. One is the oceans are vast. You can launch these missiles from anywhere. 70% of the planet is covered by water. So your opponents have to be able to find not a needle in a haystack, a needle in the state of Texas. I mean, it's huge. And then number two, your point, Hugh, the ocean itself, the sea, the matter of the sea makes it very, very difficult to detect. You can, there's some primitive, if you will, sonic technologies that can listen, but our boats are very quiet. There's no overhead sensor that can look down and suddenly the ocean becomes invisible. That day may come at some point, but boy, if you're not going to break the laws of physics, you're going to have to bend them pretty hard to get through that water base. So as far as I can see, technology-wise, life of the Columbia class, 30, 40 years, I think they will continue to be that ultimate deterrent that can't be found. That's why it's so important.
So the professional, the admiral, and the amateur, Hugh, both see the same situation, which means why doesn't Congress see this, admiral? I mean, why are we not moving? This is a serious problem. I mean, this is a genuinely strategic missile gap.
Yeah, I'm not going to be the right person to sit here and defend the actions or the strategic thinking of Congress. But let's face it, they have competing demands coming from every different zone of American life. But I think you and I would agree, if we're going to have American life, we've got to be able to defend it. And that means having deterrence with nuclear capability in the ocean. So for me, at the heart of the defense budget is that Columbia class. And by the way, you've got to have the other technologies we talked about, the cyber. For example, how could you find a Columbia class? Well, you can't find it with physics, but maybe you could crack into our nuclear codes and find it through cyber. I mean, we know where those things are. So point being, you've got to defend it with cyber, with space. You've got to put all that together. And yeah, it's expensive, but as you know well, Hugh, we spend, you know, around 3% or so, a little over 3% of our national budget on defense, our gross domestic product, excuse me, on defense. I'd say that's a very good value for money and a good insurance policy for the nation. And that's what the Columbia class is. It's the ultimate insurance policy.
You know, if I could get one constitutional amendment, Admiral, it would be 5% of GDP to the Defense Department. And I don't want them doing anything besides protecting the country. I don't want them to be given the mission to clear climate change. I don't want them to be given any other mission except defend the country. Last question, Admiral, in terms of the degree of alarm among your friends who you talk to. Are people taking this in stride, or are they genuinely looking up and saying, uh-oh?
On the hypersonics, I assume you mean, they are definitely looking up and saying, uh-oh. Just as we should be saying, uh-oh, this week about Russian forces, maybe we can discuss this next week, massing on the Ukrainian border. That is a real thing. And I don't think we're going to see a Thanksgiving surprise, but could we see a New Year's surprise and early 2020, a February surprise? You know, that's a lot of troops on the border. Point being, yes, people are taking hypersonics very seriously. Yes, they're taking Russia very seriously. These are elements, as you and I've discussed often, of great power politics. Hey, can I tease one thing with you?
Please. Today
I have a new book out. It's got a great title. Yeah, you'll get a copy shortly. It's called The Sailor's Bookshelf, 50 Books to Know the Sea. And it is the 50 books that I think would help anybody understand this gorgeous, important, strategic bastion, the oceans of the world.
The Sailor's Bookshelf. Now, obviously, the 21 volumes of Aubrey and Maturin are not, they're one book, right?
That counts as one.
Okay.
So I cheated a little bit, yes.
No, that's
they
great.
Definitely. And it's half fiction and half nonfiction. And it's for...
Tell me the title again, Admiral. The Sailor's Bookshelf?
The Sailor's Bookshelf. Google it. You'll see it right away.
I know what I'm telling the fetching Mrs. Hewitt to get me for Christmas. Thank you, Admiral. I now have a gift. She asks me every year and I don't have it. I'm getting it. Don't send it. I do need to get your autograph on a couple of books pretty soon. Admiral James Stavridis, retired United States Navy. Follow him at Stavridis on Twitter. Come back next week. We'll talk about Ruskies and what Putin's doing next. Follow me to Relief Factor. Follow me up. Look, everything's falling apart. I took my ReliefFactor.com book off the shelf, and my coins are falling down. My Mint 12 Ohio bumper stickers. Collapse in the Hewitt studio. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. 1995, you've got turkey elbow. You know what turkey elbow is. That's when you reach for the turkey and your elbow says, ah! And so turkey elbow can be fixed by ReliefFactor.com. Broken bones, no. Terrible disease, no. But the minor aches and pains that come with aging and exercise or Thanksgiving, absolutely yes. ReliefFactor.com, 3-week starter pack, $19.95. Gallagher was saying yesterday they lose money on every first package they do. Mike finally figured that out after about 10 years. I'm glad he did. They lose money, so you'll try it. So try it, ReliefFactor.com. Good morning, glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. Last week I picked up my Wall Street Journal and saw Jerry Hendricks was back. The U.S. Navy's range has diminished dangerously. I have the operational article right here. The U.S. Navy's range has diminished dangerously is must reading. Captain Hendricks, retired United States Navy, joins me now. Good morning, Captain Hendricks. How are you?
Good morning, Hugh. It's good to be here. I'm doing fine.
Well, I thought you'd... I went to check on you after the Ohio State-Purdue game, and there was mysteriously no response.
Actually, there was a response. We discussed many times that day what was going on. I was out taking a long walk, and you admitted that that was a good use of my time. And so, I appreciate you bringing up now something from 2 weeks ago. I understand where you're going with this.
I may bring that up every time, Captain Hendricks. But 1 week ago, you wrote this article in the Wall Street Journal. And then over the weekend, this article from the Financial Times that I talked with Admiral Stavridis about. Which order? I'm just going to give you the floor. Which order do you want to take? The carrier's vulnerability or all of our vulnerability from hypersonics?
Well, I think the thing is they're two of one. The fact is hypersonics is part of an ongoing Chinese investment to try and deter the United States. They're trying to create a window of deterrence that will present an opportunity for China to be able to invade Taiwan and have the U.S. essentially stay on the sidelines. So what they've been doing is essentially investing over the last 20 years in new capabilities, whether it's the DF-21, which had a 900-mile range that was called the carrier killer, or the DF-26, which was
these
the bomb
missiles.
Killer.
Remember,
yeah,
we have Steelers fans, not Boilermakers, yeah. Listening.
Yes. So they're missiles. And essentially, you know, they're missiles that were equipped with what we called maneuvering reentry vehicles, or MARVs. And they were meant to be able to come over the top and essentially begin to maneuver so that it would be very difficult for U.S. surface-to-air missiles to shoot them down, and that they were targeting our aircraft carriers. They were trying to press that aircraft carrier back beyond 1,000 miles from China so that China would have a free hand inside that first island chain that ran from Japan down to Taiwan, down to the Philippines, down to Indonesia, Malaysia. The idea that China wanted to own everything inside that first island chain, and they wanted the Americans to stay out. Hypersonics are just the most recent investment that they have made. And the fact is China is essentially, you know, we were 30 years ahead of the Chinese. We stopped developing hypersonics in the 1970s. They have picked up where we were, and they're moving forward right now with this most recent test that came out in the Financial Times. It's very clear that they are either working on what we would call a MIRV, or a multiple reentry vehicle, where they're being able to split off their warhead to come in with several different warheads, or they're working on what we call a PENAID, or a penetration aid, which is that they're sending off decoys to make it more difficult for us to shoot things down. But it's very clear that they have an aggressive testing program, and that their testing program right now exceeds what we are doing vis-a-vis testing. But to come back to the carrier thing, which was the op-ed that I did in the Wall Street Journal, we in naval aviation have been ignoring this. Right now, the number one priority that we have in naval aviation is the development of the next generation air dominance aircraft, meaning a fighter aircraft to control the air, when in fact we need something that has long-range penetration to be able to go in and strike Chinese targets, like the launch sites for hypersonic weapons or these DF-21 missiles or DF-26 missiles. We're sort of focused on maintaining dominance of the air, when in fact we ought to be doing something that can hit China where it hurts and deterring them. You know, if you want to maintain peace, prepare for war, we seem to be sort of focused on maintaining just the status quo.
Now, Captain Hendricks, first of all, to your production team there, more light is always better than less light. So you look a little sinister in the darkness there, so throw more light on you. But then, and I know your production team well, and she will be on it shortly, I'm sure. But you ought to be ahead of everyone, because you wrote Retreat Beyond Range in 2015. You've been warning about this problem of carrier vulnerability. As a carrier advocate, I think they operate in almost any zone except the China conflict with pretty necessary significance, whether or not they have shorter range. But you just brought up something, which is the ability to take out second. We're going back to like 1970s and 80s stuff. It's going to be completely alien to young people. Second strike capability, meaning the ability to take out whatever they sent up on the first strike, meaning their second silos and their cities. Do we still have that?
No, we don't. And in fact, it's funny, because sitting right here on the shelf next to me is Herman Kahn's, you know, On Thermonuclear War, where we get into that theory of being able to do first strike, second strike, whether we're doing counter value, where I'm going after industry, or whether I'm going counter force against their military force. The Navy built supercarriers, the Forrestal class in the 1950s, to be able to launch deep into the Soviet Union. We no longer have that ability to go deep inside the enemy territory to be able to hit their critical targets. So the Navy has lost in many ways a sort of a conventional deterrent capability. Although, as Admiral Stavridis said a half hour ago on your show, you know, we're investing heavily in the Columbia class, which means we'll maintain that sort of second strike capability that should deter them from nuclear war. But we don't have the ability to handle escalation in conventional war, where we're not launching the nukes. So right now, the Navy needs not only hypersonic weapons, but it also needs the platforms to launch them from. So we only have the three Zumwalt-class destroyers right now that we're thinking about the Navy's conventional prompt strike hypersonic weapon on. We need the Virginia Block 5 submarines, but they're not coming for another decade or so. And we need, obviously, to get the aircraft carrier back into the fight. You know, Hugh, I can't tell you how frustrated I am as a historian and fan of aircraft carriers that we don't have an aircraft that can go on that deck that can hit the enemy at range. You know, we're spending $13 billion per Ford-class aircraft carrier, and it doesn't have an air wing that lives up to the potential of that aircraft carrier. That seems to me just mismanagement on the part of naval aviation leadership.
Now, Captain Hendricks, from 2009 to 2017, America was asleep at the switch. I believe in the last 2 years of the Trump administration, we began to throw money at hypersonics. Is there any indication from what you know that we are spending strategically now with a targeted response to the CCP's lurch for domination?
I believe that we have increased the research and development budget in hypersonics. We have, to my knowledge, at least four major programs going on. The Navy's got conventional prompt strike. The Army has the long-range hypersonic weapon program. The Air Force is looking at a program called Hawk, which is a hypersonic air-breathing weapon. And then they have Arrow, which is a rapid response weapon. DARPA is continuing to develop things in hypersonics. The problem is, Hugh, is that we're not really into production yet. The Army looks like that they'll get the first operational capability the fastest, probably around 2024 to 2025. But quite frankly, China and Russia are already there. And so this creates this window of vulnerability. This is why these windows, you know, they talked about the missile gap in the Eisenhower administration and the bomber gap a little previous to that. These windows are when the enemy senses that they have a strategic capability that we don't and that they can move. It's a moment of advantage for them. And so this is one of the reason why Admiral Davidson said that he believes that China could invade Taiwan within the next 6 years, is they clearly have some capabilities we don't, and they need to move before they lose that capability.
There's an old Marxist-Leninist doctrine, which many of our younger listeners will not have heard, correlation of forces. And that was drummed into me as a civilian. I'm sure you heard it endlessly as a Navy man. What's the correlation of forces right now look like to you, Captain Hendrick?
Well, the correlation of forces, I mean, quite frankly, I'm worried whether China moves. We always thought that China wouldn't move until after their Olympics, sort of like Russia didn't move against Georgia until after the Sochi Olympics. Right now, I believe that Xi Jinping is making a calculation as to whether now is his moment to move, meaning even with before the Olympics or immediately after the Olympics, that now is his moment. He senses weakness in the United States based upon our rapid withdrawal from Afghanistan and the loss of credibility that we had associated with that. He also thinks that he has a technological advantage. If he feels that he has enough cards, meaning he's built up enough capabilities that he can move against Taiwan and that we will not respond, then he does move. And that would radically destabilize Western Pacific. Japan would begin to re-question our commitment to them, the Philippines most certainly. You would start to see people tip away from the United States. Now, on the good side, we have the Australia, United Kingdom, U.S. deal on submarines. That seems to suggest that we're building an alliance structure based upon advanced capabilities. But the question is whether we'll have enough time. That type of relationship.
When anyone says it's not about the money, it's always about the money. And when anyone says, I assume anything, like I assume they wouldn't move before the Olympics, that person is not thinking clearly. Jerry Hendricks thinks clearly. Get his book, To Provide and Maintain. Go read his Wall Street Journal essay from last week. Get him on your show, national media. He'll get the lighting fixed. Turn it up, Captain. Turn it up. I'll be right back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined by United States Senator Tom Cotton. Good morning, Senator. How are you?
Good morning, Hugh. I'm good. Good to be with you. Happy early Thanksgiving.
And to you and yours, I hope you have an easy one, a great one, even with Smalls around. Genghis Kate is approaching my house even as we speak. So when I get home, it's going to be a nightmare on Thanksgiving Row. We are not enemies, but friends. We must not be enemies, though passion may have strained. It must not break our bonds of affection. Lincoln, of course, you're a Lincoln scholar. There's a giant conservative pundit crack-up underway. What would you say to everyone, Senator, since you get along with everyone?
I understand that obviously we have some differences on the right in America. Those differences go back a long ways. They've been written about in the pages of National Review, for instance, going back to the 50s and the 60s. Matt Continetti today is a great scholar of them. But certainly what we have in common and what unites all of us as conservatives and increasingly just normal common sense Americans is far greater than what distinguishes us from the far-left ideologues who have seized control of the Democratic Party today and, frankly, many of the institutions of our society, the commanding heights of society, Hugh, if you will, if I can borrow from the left's fellow travelers, places like universities and big tech and big Hollywood and the media. And while we have our differences, we should always remember that we are united in what makes this country great and try to do our very best to defend it.
Now, the very most important thing is that the institutions of the Republic actually go on for another generation for your kids and my grandkids. And the Chinese have launched a hypersonic. You and I have talked about it before. More reporting emerged over the weekend that hypersonic was, as Admiral Stavridis said in the last hour, a bus
of sorts, that they not only sent it up into space, orbited the planet at five times the speed of sound, they sent things out as they went. It's a MIRV, but it's not a MIRV. It's worse. When you assured me that we were in the game a couple of weeks ago, are you still as confident today as you were a couple of weeks ago?
So, Hugh, I'm confident that we are in the game. Am I confident that we are leading the game by as much as we should? No. And that's been my consistent warning, not just about hypersonic technology, but about military strength simply. Security competition in a dangerous world is not like the 100-meter dash, Hugh. It's not enough to win it by a nose. You have to be so far ahead of your competition that they would never even think about taking a shot at the title. And unfortunately, Joe Biden's defense budget, just like 8 years of Barack Obama's defense budgets, does nothing but weaken our military and therefore encourage adversaries to take that shot at the title.
Can you walk down the hall and find Joe Manchin and say, look, I'm not going to vote for BBB under any circumstances, but if you're going to vote for it, could you at least get the Columbia class forward funded? He's a smart guy. Is he not? Is there no Democrat aware of what is happening?
Hugh, I tell you what, if I could convince Joe Manchin to vote against this reckless tax and spending bill, then we would promise to homeport all of those submarines in West Virginia. Even
I agree.
How about that?
We'll dig a channel. I think we can get the Potomac extended up to wherever. What's the name of that city where John Brown invaded? What's its name?
Harper's Ferry.
Yeah, that's it. We can get the Potomac at Harper's Ferry into a deep port. That would certainly keep people working in West Virginia for a long time. But in all seriousness, is there not one Democrat who will stand up and say, we've spent $10 trillion in 3 years and we have not adjusted the defense budget in real terms north?
I'm afraid not in public, Hugh. And they certainly wouldn't risk their reckless spending bill that's going to do nothing but drive more inflation and discourage people from working and pay off their client groups and fund ridiculous things like tree equity in Nancy Pelosi's hometown park. And proposing more defense spending in that bill almost certainly would do that. Because, well, you might have someone like Joe Manchin who takes their defense seriously. There are dozens of crazed ideologues in the House of Representatives who would never vote for more defense spending. In fact, they want to slash the defense budget by even more. They want to zero out our nuclear programs. They want to stop all of this nuclear modernization. So, regrettably, you have way too many left-wing ideologues in the Democratic Party to accept even a responsible proposal like you make.
You know, there is a Politico story this morning, Senator Cotton, that the Democrats have figured out that their brand is not only dented and broken, it's maybe irretrievably so after Virginia. And they are worried, they are alarmed that they're going to get wiped out beyond any reasonable expectation of a wipeout in the first midterm of a president's first term in 2022 because of the Virginia results. And I think this better Build Back Better bill is it now replaces Neil Kinnock or whoever it was, Labor Party manifesto as the longest suicide note in history. It is nutty. $200 million for the Presidio Park? $200 million for the park next to Nancy Pelosi's neighborhood?
I guess power has its perks, Hugh.
Yeah, well, that was the headline.
That tree equity is. Well, I don't. I'm not even sure I know what tree equity is. Maybe they're worried about the poor, sad, deciduous trees that have lost their leaves as we're going into the season when evergreens are celebrated. So we want to make sure that we treat all trees fairly.
Senator Lankford pointed out that Western Oklahoma has no trees, and so if there's a tree equity argument that we got to go to Western Oklahoma, does Arkansas have trees fairly evenly distributed over it?
No, not at all. So in South Arkansas, we have about 1,000 trees per acre, Hugh, and in East Arkansas, we have about 2 trees per acre. So I guess when you work it out on average, we have fairly evenly distributed trees. But no, we at like East Arkansas, or like Western Oklahoma, I should say, Eastern Arkansas is very flat, fertile farm country. So
I think there's a way for you to get
tree equity over in East Arkansas.
Well, you know, eventually any demand for equity means we cut down all the trees. That's what it means, actually. But at the end of the day, the only way to get tree equity in any kind of climate variance and geographical differentiation is to cut them all down. So I don't, whenever anyone raises equity, but if we can go back to BBB, what is it on life support? Is it going to make it through? What do you hear?
So it just passed the House. What the House passed will never make it through the Senate. It's a massive tax break for rich homeowners in places like New Jersey and California. Sorry, Hugh.
No, it was a perfect bill for me, but I was kind of surprised that they were giving me a tax break in this bill.
Yeah, I think that's the single biggest line item in the bill, Hugh, is a tax break for rich homeowners in places like New York and New Jersey and California. It also has a massive amnesty. Probably 9 million illegal migrants will get some kind of amnesty in that deal. To include, or in addition, it has hundreds of billions of dollars of welfare payments for households that have no breadwinner in it. Not even someone looking for work or someone getting free job training for work. So that bill is dead on arrival in the Senate. And we'll see what the Senate can produce based in part on Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema's positions. I'm certainly hopeful that in the end they can't find a way to square the circle to get 51 votes and 218 votes in the House for the same bill, because there's almost nothing in this bill that will be good for America in the long run.
Now, Senator Cotton, I'm old enough to remember when a young Tom Cotton, veteran of the Iraq War, came back to run for the House in Arkansas in 2012. If you had been gifted with a bill that had a vote in it to create permanent residency for 9 million people who entered the country illegally, would you have campaigned on that? Would you have campaigned on tree equity? Or would you have found a way to put both of those and the $200 million for Nancy Pelosi's neighborhood park into one-minute ad?
Probably so, Hugh. All those things are massively unpopular. They reflect the fads and the fashions and the preferences of far-left ideologues in charge of the Democratic Party, not normal Arkansans who look to their government to do basic things like protect our streets, to help us raise our kids in safe communities, to secure our borders, to protect this nation. It's just one more example. This bill is just one more example of how far left the Democratic Party has gone. Like I have to say to you, apparent murderer in Waukesha County, who was released by a George Soros-backed prosecutor in Milwaukee on a pittance of a bail, despite having a rap sheet as long as your arm. I've been cautioning people about this for years, that if you let dangerous felons off on low bail, if you let them out of prison early, if you reduce mandatory minimums, that you're going to have a spike in crime. And that's exactly what we saw. We saw some of its tragic consequences in Waukesha, Wisconsin on Sunday night.
Do you know that the Department of Justice just paid out, I've got to find that, $130 million to the Parkland shooting victims because of FBI incompetence? All right, let me take that and apply it to Waukesha. That prosecutor and that department, under this theory, is liable to all of the 48 people injured, the five who are dead, and everyone who's traumatized, because I know the intentional infliction of emotional distress isn't the tort that will lie here. But they did this. That Milwaukee prosecutor's office let this killer out for $1,000 bail, which means, I think, I don't know the Wisconsin law, 10%, right? You have to come up with cash, 10%, and isn't cash bail 10% of the bail? $100? So he got out for $100?
Whether it was $100 or whether it was $10,000, he paid 10% of it. Obviously, it was much too low. With the rap sheet as long as this felon and the crimes he was accused of, he should never have been walking in the streets. This is what happens when left-wing ideologues seize control of law enforcement and impose their ideological goals. They may enjoy and fetishize their crazy ideological goals, but it causes real harm. And in this case, tragically, it's caused destruction of hundreds, if not thousands, of lives of people who have been killed or tragically injured, perhaps permanently.
Senator, last question. The Democrats may not be aware, but sometimes parties disappear. And the Conservative Party in Canada got almost reduced to nothing a decade and a half or so ago. The Liberals, the Labour in England got smashed up by Boris Johnson, one of their repeated wrecks and train wrecks. They eventually recover. But I think they're looking at an extinction-level event in 2022 with this Build Back Better. I mean, it's crazy. Do you agree with me?
Yes, Hugh. Things like amnesty for illegal aliens, $200 million for Nancy Pelosi's backyard park, billions of dollars for tree equity, and all of which will be driving inflation for the next year, making it harder for Americans to make ends meet, while also imposing their crazy faddish ideas like critical race theory at our schools, the Democrats are going to be in a world of hurt next November.
And they should be. I mean, no party has deserved it more. None has been more reckless with a narrow win than I think in modern political times, the Democrats. Senator Tom Cotton, thank you for a year. I'm thankful for you and for Mrs. Cotton and for Cotton Small for allowing you to indulge me once a week. And I appreciate it. Keep fighting the good fight. Senator, happy Thanksgiving to you.
Thank you, Hugh. Happy Thanksgiving to you and all of your listeners.
All right. Even Dwayne?
Even Dwayne.
All right. That's amazing. The senator is in a very, very giving mood. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. They're with Sierra Pacific. They lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. If you have listened to this show for many years, you know that Danielle Hitchin is one of the force majeures of publishing. Catechesisbooks.com and BabyBelieverBooks.com are amazing efforts to reach small children with those edible books. That's what they chew on, right? The kind of books that Danielle puts out. She joins us now. Good morning, Danielle.
Good morning, Hugh. Thanks for having me back.
You have a Kickstarter that is oh so close. We need just a few dozen people to go there and help out, right?
That's exactly right. We are about 95% funded, and the campaign closes tonight at 11:59 p.m. Eastern. So anybody who'd like to help us out in publishing the first Spanish edition of a Baby Believer book should head on over to babybeliever.com in order to donate.
You're a good radio pro. Let's assume that nobody has any idea what babybeliever.com is or what you are doing at Kickstarter. Please explain it all and make the ask.
All right. So all the Baby Believer books are primer-style board books designed to teach babies, toddlers, and preschoolers the core tenets of the Christian faith through basic concepts like counting, opposites, animals, ABCs, etc. And when I started this project, it seems to me that there was nothing more urgent or necessary than raising up the next generation to be a properly catechized, theologically well-formed generation. Children are never too young to begin learning the scriptures. And while books of Bible stories are good and necessary, children have to go beyond Bible stories to actual theology. And, you know, the next generation of Christians are going to be called to stand firm and make an answer for their faith in a way that no previous generation of American Christians have. In our increasingly divided society, it is of paramount importance to start training children from their earliest days to know and to love the Word of God. And we believe that that should happen in English, but it should also be happening in other languages, which is one reason we're trying to expand the Baby Believer series into foreign languages. And we're starting with Spanish. Over 5% of the world's population are native Spanish speakers. It's the second most widely spoken language in the world. And over 10% of the U.S. population speaks Spanish at home. And so we want to be able to expand these resources so that Spanish-speaking families have quality discipleship tools in their native language. So this is why we are Kickstarter funding for Primeros Principios Biblicos, which is a Spanish edition of First Bible Basics Accounting Primer.
Now, Danielle Hitchin, my Spanish is about as bad as anybody, so I'm not even going to try and say that again. Will you repeat the title?
Sure. Primeros Principios Biblicos.
Yeah, that you could be talking, Yugoslavian. There's no such language I know. But you could be doing that and I wouldn't know. But I know the idea that 10% of America speaks Spanish at home. And so the Baby Believer books, maybe publishers commercially don't quite believe it yet. It's going to be a huge success. But you have to go to Kickstarter to get the first one going like you did. How many Baby Believer books are there?
There are 8 now and we've got more coming.
And they are wildly successful, but not in Spanish, because the publishing world doesn't believe that there's a market there at Walmart or, yeah, I mean, they're in Costco. Baby Believer books can be bundled and bought pretty much in superstores, right?
You can get them mostly online. In person, you can get them at places like Barnes & Noble and several Christian bookstores like Mardell's. And there are a few other like independent chains as well.
The Fetching Mrs. Hewitt always gives them as baby shower present. That's like the Fetching Mrs. Hewitt's go-to baby shower present because they're wonderful and children love them, babies love them, parents love them, and they are edifying. And if we are going to have not a Christian nation, but a nation of Christians, they actually need some catechesis, right? That's the bottom line.
Yes, for sure. You know, I have seen so much fruit in my own children from reading these books and from their understanding of things like the ascension of Jesus, which I know seems a little obscure, but we just passed Christ the King Sunday at my church. And so we talked to our children about how King Jesus is reigning. He ascended into heaven and was seated at the right hand of the Father, and he has authority over all of the earth. And it's really hard to have that conversation with a child if they've got no notion of who Jesus is, how he was fully God and fully man, and that he was ascended into heaven. And those are all topics that are covered in my book in really child-appropriate ways. And not just for like 10-year-olds, but for two-year-olds. You know, my two-year-old can talk about how the church makes disciples because she's been reading these books with me for a few years. And it's just so wonderful to see her use this theological vocabulary. And it helps us to have these really deep and meaningful conversations about our faith life and our own family.
You know, lesson first of the Baltimore Catechism, what is our purpose on the earth, to know, love, and serve God? That's drilled into Catholics in the first grade, and they never forget it, right? By the third grade, if you're getting confirmed, you know it by heart. Babybeliever.com does it. The Kickstarter runs out tonight. You're close. Where do they find it, Danielle Hitchin?
They can find the Kickstarter at babybeliever.com. You can click the button for the Kickstarter right on the homepage. It says back the Kickstarter, so you just go ahead and click that, and you hit the Kickstarter. Or you can continue on to my website if you want to look at some more of our work in English. We have 8 books, as I mentioned, along with several other things, which would make fabulous Christmas presents for the little people in your life who are English speaking, if you are so inclined to move that direction.
They are the best Christmas present for the little people in your lives. Danielle, happy Thanksgiving to you and yours. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for all the great work you do. And thank all of you for listening. I conclude by asking you, when you're done with Danielle, head over to HughHewitt.com. Find, in fact, you can't give the Prison Fellowship kids the Baby Believer books, but you can give them a gift. And I wouldn't be surprised if Prison Fellowship figures out that the Baby Believer books are what Angel Tree needs to deliver. The Angel Tree banner is at the top of HughHewitt.com. I keep asking you to do things because that's why I'm here. That's why I've been gifted with this. I know I Oh, and I owe you and God everything, and Dwayne and Adam and Ben. Thank you for listening. I'll be back tomorrow on the next, of course, the Fetching Mrs. Hewitt Show.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.